bring the meeting to order at 7 o'clock. The invocation will be done by Mike Spence and the flag salute by Steve Cox.
Kind gracious Heavenly Father, we're grateful that we can gather as the West Community Unified School District Board of Trustees and as concerned faculty and staff and students. We're grateful, Father, for the opportunity we have to serve in this district and for the progress that's been made. And we do ask for a blessing on this meeting, that it would be a productive one that focuses on the educational needs of children. And at this time, too, we also pray for our country and its leaders as we face various crises here and abroad. And this we pray in Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in our salute to the flag. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call. Here.
Here. Here. Here.
Here.
Here. We're going to be starting out this evening's meeting by giving certificates to our counselors. We appreciate everything they do for all of our students, and we know that because of them, our students achieve academically far better than they would without having you in their lives on a daily basis. So thank you so much for all you do, and we will call your name. And as your name is called, if you could come up and receive your certificate.
Sarah Arce from Edgewood Middle School. Will you come up and receive those who couldn't be with us tonight?
Sure.
He's going to deliver them tomorrow.
Sarah might be here, but she might be there by herself.
Okay, go ahead and hand that one to her.
There you go.
Jennifer Sampiello. Carrie Harris. Mark Pedicini. Kathy Turney. Lillian Moreno from Walnut Grove. Sona Ohanian from Coronado. Bernadette Ferraco from West Covina High School. Kristen Friesen, West Covina High School. Linda Gordon, West Covina High School. Sharon Farrow, West Covina High School. Cano, West Covina High School. Maria Trong, West Covina High School. Lauren Brent, West Covina High School. Ruth Holguin, West Covina High School. Betty Castrida, West Covina High School. Amy Heilman, West Covina High School. She's representing the others. She's representing them well. Karen Cavosi, West Covina High School. Patricia Silva, San Jose Edison. We will now move to our Title I Achieving Schools. And if the principal and would the teachers please stand, we'll start with Gordon Fitzer of Merced Elementary School.
Good
Mary Donaldson, Title I Achieving Orangewood. All right. Mr. William Bertrand, Title I Achieving School, Vine Elementary School. Dr. Denise Patton, San Jose Academy, and her staff. Are these hers? Are these all hers?
Thank you so much. And there you go.
You can see we have a talented group of people that make it possible for our schools to actually to achieve these awards. And we appreciate all you do for the Title I students and that the accomplishment of actually getting this award that makes all of us look good. And we know the most important thing is what it's done for the students in your schools. So thank you, all of you. We're going to take just a two-minute break. For those of you who may want to be excused, and then we can also go and congratulate those of you who are going to be needing to prepare for tomorrow's lessons.
Congratulations. I'll tell them about that certificate.
And you better include Gloria,
too. Okay.
Oh, and we had one teacher show up.
Don't egg him on.
Congratulations, Holly.
Where is he? If the board members can come back up.
Hopefully we can raise some money.
David, how are you?
Good, how are you?
How's this year going?
Wonderful.
They jumped the day of being here at the end of Sunday.
Blessing in the skies.
Really?
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you
want to hear? Usually just drives you sort of down and can't have no one to do at all.
Yeah. They actually are pursuing.
Yeah, want me to?
Oh, okay. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh.
If I don't get the information, I will buy that.
And Jessica.
Except for the kids
see them?
Yeah, good.
So, how they got that?
Our student representative has to leave. She has to study for school, which we all recognize, and we appreciate her coming with such thorough reports. And she is going, we're moving her up so she can be excused to go and do the things she needs to do for school. Yes, yes.
Okay, so at West Covina High School this Friday, we have a Mr. Bulldog show, and it's like a little male pageant for our guys this Friday. And this past Saturday, our dance drill team won first place in all three divisions, small, medium, and large military. On Saturday, our wrestling team, five of our players got league champions, so yay for that.
Yay.
Oh.
Yes. And best one, our very own Samantha Lopez is a four-time girls state champion in wrestling.
Yeah.
Also this weekend, our academic decathlon team got 10th place out of 66 schools at a super oral quiz at USC. And our AP test registration starts today.
Wow. Thank you so much for your report. We're moving on to the Student Achievement Plan for San Jose Edison. Dr. Patton.
Already. Oh, great. Thank you, Monica. Good evening, board members. It's a pleasure to be up here for the first time this year. We're always very excited to come before you and sort of share our successes and just sort of what types of things that we're thinking about and implementing at San Jose Edison Academy. And we wanted to start off, we've used the same template that all the other district schools have been using. And so we start off with our data analysis. And you'll see up there is our API growth. We're very, very excited about the progress that we have been able to make since opening our doors in 1998-99 school year, from a 638 up until our most recent, broke the 900 barrier, 905, and we're very excited about that. Our second slide with the data analysis shows over time our growth according to the AYP. And the percentage of students, again, starting off in 2002 since they first started calculating the AYP at 42% of our students proficient in ELA up to a 76%. And the 76 means so much to us because when we opened our doors in 1998, 71% of our students came to us below grade level in reading and many of them far below grade level. So we've literally switched that around. And in math, from 42% up to 78% of our students are proficient with our most recent results. This data analysis is just an example to show you how we another way we track our data. When we look at this, we really want to look at over time, and we look at quite a few areas. And what you don't see, we have our math goes all the way down to eighth grade, and as well as our history, social science, and our science we track. We try to look at how we've done going across the grade levels, as well as comparing the growth, how West Covina is doing, our comparison, just to give us an idea of how we are progressing. And I do believe in the West Covina, our numbers are also mixed in with the West Covina average up there. Our findings, school-wide gains are continuing to be made, and SJEA is continuing to close the achievement gap. I think one of the things that we are most proud is about what we are doing for what we would call the underserved. And we have often said probably one of the greatest embarrassments in public education across the nation is the achievement gap. And it's something that should not be happening in our nation. And I think schools are really putting the emphasis, and I'm really happy to see that the emphasis is starting to be placed about for schools that are doing well, that's terrific. But what are you doing for the underserved, typically underserved SED students? And so we're really doing a lot in closing that achievement gap. While we're continuing to make overall progress from 881 to a 905, our Hispanic population is our largest population, approximately approximately 74% of our students. And they are also making 29% growth over our overall. And our social economic disadvantaged students actually made the most at 35%. And they were up at 878. So we were very excited about closing that gap. The analysis of our action plan in the 07-08 school year, we put together an action plan as we do every year. And I did not include that in it. We usually have like an 8-page up to 14-page student achievement plan that I'm more than happy to email to you if you'd like to see. But we do take planning for our success quite seriously. And in fact, SJEA considers it a school in continuous improvement. We're very excited with the 905, but we still had 76 and 78% of our kids gaining. That means that we are still in the 20s for students that we need to recover and we need to push to proficiency. Now, what we are happy about, of those, for example, 24% that aren't proficient in reading, we literally have 23% at basic. We have very, very, very few students at below basic and far below basic. There's just a huge amount that we want to just get right from basic into proficient. So we take our planning quite seriously. The actions taken have had a positive effect on our student achievement. Some of those things that we did look at last year are staff professional development. Our staff professional development at Edison is literally a pillar of our success. It's not easy wanting to do staff development. It's not easy for those teachers to be meeting collaboratively, to be going through literacy PDs, to be giving their time to better themselves as a professional. But it pays dividends galore. It's really, we take it very seriously. It's intentional and it's purposeful. We extended our school day to 7.5 hours last year, and that has made a lot of, huge difference. How can it not? When students are in school for 7.5 hours a day, it obviously is going to impact the type of learning that can take place. Extended learning time for Junior Academy Math and Language Arts sections. We have approximately 1.5 hours for each of those areas. And our winter break writing intensive last year, we ran a 3-day intensive for 4th and 7th graders, and we actually worked on and focused on writing strategies. And to continue, our SFA tutoring program is something we take very seriously. We have exceptional tutors, very highly well-trained, work great with the kids. We have our SFA accelerated reading groups. And that shouldn't be confused with the gifted. In this case, accelerated means that we want to accelerate their learning. So all the children who are below grade level are specifically placed in an accelerated reading group where we use different type of, still the SFA program, but the cycles may be longer. There may be additional type of tutorials on the computer that we use at a certain time to try to recover. And we've had some very good success. We've had our Saturday tutoring sessions for basic students that we usually start in March, and they last up through April. We have our kindering tutoring program that we implemented last year. Our kinder teachers work a 6.5-hour day with students, and they devote that extra hour a day where they work collaboratively in identifying the most neediest students at kinder level and use their time tutoring when they aren't teaching the students. We've had individual teacher tutoring as well, and we've used software to address the language arts and reading deficits. And one of the newer things we're also looking at is our transition programs. We have seen that there is a very, very difficult transition for third graders to fourth graders from 20 to 1 to 34 to 1. So we have spent a lot of time, third graders and fourth graders, collaboratively as they work together bringing those kids up, as well as our fifth grade into our sixth grade. We have articulated grade level meetings. We have the student planner for the first time. It used to be a junior high thing, then a fifth grade. We actually have every student first through eighth grade is provided a student planner in which they begin to work on organizational skills and those types of things as they move up through the grade levels. Our professional development plan for this year, we are putting a lot of emphasis in the explicit direct instruction training. Student engagement needs to be very high if you're going to teach students. That's all there is to it. And so what this did, it allowed our teachers and our entire staff to gain additional knowledge with strategies that would continue to engage students, from the pulling of name and number sticks to the use of whiteboards. There's just literally to TAPL. There are all types of strategies that have really firmed up the type of instruction and that student engagement that's taking place in the classroom. We had our Edison Learning Fall Instructional Leadership that we have several people attend, and we also had our Edison Learning Leadership Development in which we hosted. We were the host school at the Pacific Palms this year, and that was a big success. We have bi-monthly literacy PDs every other week. We actually go out and we work on the teaching of reading. How do we become better instructors when it comes to literacy? We have various technology PDs for strategic student intervention. We have focused grade level and subject level meetings, and we have a monthly curriculum rotation on the third Thursday of each month. And we are asked to provide some information regarding our grade level and department meetings, and this is a glimpse of what that looks like at our school. We do have daily PD time, and it's used to hold meetings. When we have houses, as you all realize now, we have houses and groups of teachers. When those students go out to our specialists, like our health and fitness, music, art, that gives teacher time for collaboration. And during that time, they can meet on Mondays for literacy and lead-generated PDs. Tuesdays are always house issue meetings because our leadership team meets every Monday afternoon. And so the lead teachers of the house go back out to the house and share that information about the governance of the school, and then it comes back like an accordion. We have grade and level subject 2 days a week where they plan data analysis, subject level planning, and then Friday we have our comprehensive support team, which is our RTI model. And the agendas for the meetings and the minutes are all provided to the administration team. And then some additional site meetings. We have our leadership team meetings in which I spoke of. We have a lead team with the curriculum coordinators. The first Monday of every month, we invite all 12 curriculum coordinators to our leadership team meeting in which they discuss the goals of that month, or the goals of the quarter. They may talk about observations that they have made. They will talk about trends and patterns that they happen to be seeing according to what the benchmark results are telling us. And we also discuss how our thresholds are doing, our benchmark thresholds at that meeting every month. And then we have curriculum coordinator meetings. In fact, we had one this morning at 7 a.m. and held the second Tuesday. We have grade level chair meetings the Thursday, and we have our staff meeting, one meeting a month that we come together. Our fiscal and human resources, this is where we spend the majority of our money. The curriculum materials that we purchase, and it does take a big part of our budget, are hands-on things that we want engagement. We want students engaged, bottom line. We want them there, we want them focused, and we want to make learning actually fun. And I know that a sort of a cliche may be overused, but when students are enjoying what they're doing, they're going to learn. So our hands-on science, all of our science is taught with the hands-on. We use the FOSS science. It does cost money to replenish those. The manipulatives for the math, our everyday math has manipulatives. Our SFA reading materials, that is definitely something that we consume, especially at the roots level. Our everyday math and our technology software. We also provide in human services when it comes to stipends. We truly believe in building capacity at the school and empowerment. And we look for as many possibilities to have teacher leaders as possible. So we have leadership positions for our lead teachers, our grade level chairs, our curriculum coordinators. We also put money into our Rising Stars. It's our Saturday school targeted intervention. We put money into our professional development. Our non-participation program, which I'll talk a little bit more about later. Basically, any student who's not making a GPA at the middle school is put on just not a non-participation list where they can't go to the dances and they can't participate in sports, but we actually do something about it. And I'll explain a little later. And then our technology staff is a huge service. There's so much technology going on over at Edison that if we didn't have the staff, such a highly trained and skilled staff, I don't know what we would be able to do in continuing to get that technology used like a second language. This year, our action steps. SFA students are incorporating Lexia. We did not have Lexia last year as one of our software. We are now incorporating it 2 to 3 times a week within the SFA. I want to say, Aaron, every day now, okay? 2 to 3 times a last, every day that we've been able to incorporate. They either go at the very beginning of SFA or they go at the very end of SFA, depending on how we rotate them through. It is an intervention software. Our EDI strategies, that's something that the explicit direct instruction, we've incorporated that into our observations. So now when administration actually goes in to observe teachers, we've asked them to have a special thing, a special area on their pre-observation write-up about what type of EDI strategies are they going to be utilizing and how it has been effective, and we'll give feedback on that. And full implementation of the customized learning in grades K through 5. We are still waiting for the Junior Academy fire. It put us behind in being able to open up that cafeteria as our library media center for junior high. So we've fully implemented K through 5, and we've halfway implemented with the lab for the Junior Academy. Tightening up our SOS, that school operating system. And while some people say, well, what do you mean by your school operating system? It's the way we do things around here. It's the way we, the logistics of running the school, what we offer students. And we often ask ourselves every day, is what we're doing in the best interest of students? And if it's not, we need to go back from the leadership team to the admin leadership team and talk about how does this need to be tightened up. And I gave you a few just very simple examples, folders. We learned a couple years ago that at every grade level, our kids have to memorize a different color folder for a different subject. And that may seem really sort of like, okay, well, whatever. But for the kids who have no problem with learning, they can know in fourth grade math is blue, fifth grade math might be yellow. It doesn't matter. But for the struggling student who lacks organization skills, for them to have to figure out in kindergarten it's this color, first grade it's this color, third grade, whatever. So now we actually went back and every grade, math is blue, bottom line. And reading is red. And homework is orange. And so they know literally to associate those folders, and it has really helped move some of those kids forward. And I don't know why we didn't think about it before, but sometimes those things just, we actually took the idea from another school we heard about and thought, yeah, duh, that's a really good idea. So, and then the concept of practice makes permanent. We heard this when the district brought in the DataWorks gentleman, and he was going over some of the EDI strategies and different things with TAPL in working with the EL student. And he made a comment and said, the more you send out packets and the more you have these kids practicing skills that they don't know, you have just made that error permanent. And so we took that information. I said, whoa, we've really got to rethink how we do homework, when homework is assigned, how we do vacation packets, what does that look like? Because, again, the student who's not having trouble will run home and do that homework packet over winter break and love it. The kid who struggles and doesn't get any help, he wants extra credit. He wants a little ticket. He'll do it, and he'll do it wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong and then turn it in. So we've really reexamined our practices on how we have children continue to practice what they know or don't know. The non-participation study hall, it's at Junior Academy, and this is for the children who aren't making the grade. We do have home-based teachers in Junior Academy. Every child has a home-based teacher attached to them. And what we have said, if you have a student who is falling below that GPA, that student is required 2 days a week to come during, we extended the lunchtime. So for the students who need to go into the study hall, there is time built within that lunch. They still get their 30-minute lunch, and they meet with their home-based teacher to talk about skills and lessons, not just to do their homework, not just, okay, sit down and let's go, but literally we're trying to teach these kids about why it's important that they get their homework done, why it's important they stay engaged. They do grade checks. They go on the computer to see where they need help. The teacher will help counsel them on maybe when they can make up a test that they had missed and there was a zero on the computer. So that's a direct interest of our staff into the students that they are specifically monitoring over the course of the 3 years that they have them as a home-based teacher for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And this is something new that we've started. We were having after-school classes for our non-participation kids, in which, but because we have so many kids who come in with carpools and all over, and it was very difficult to demand that every kid stay after school for these, we said, well, why don't we do it during the school day? And we made it a requirement that they must meet with their home-based teacher twice a day until they can clear and get themselves off of the NP list. Because our goal is to have not one single kid on the NP list, on the non-participation list. So we really thought it was important to start helping those kids do something about that. And then our extended technology learning opportunities in all subject areas. We have really, really geared up on the software tutorial at home, as well as the curriculum. For example, our English Language Arts has software that children can access from home about their books. Science, they can get online about their books. Math, we have Hot Math. And then, of course, Achieve 3000, they can use in our labs as well as access it from home. And we allow them to do that now instead of just reading their book. That we ask them to read 20 minutes a night. They can actually do that Achieve 3000 software, KidBiz. And then we have Lexia and we have Alex. And just a little, we're very excited about our recognition. We, again, were selected for the California Business for Education Excellence, Closing the Gap. And we've been our school board association, the Golden Bell, and we are currently a nominee. We're currently writing the application. It's due on the 18th of February as a National Blue Ribbon School. Okay, any questions?
Ms. Shoemaker is going to.
My page where I had my question.
Oh, no problem.
The non-participation study hall sounds really interesting to me. I was just wondering, how many students do you think on average you have on the list, and how long it takes them to progress to a point where they no longer are on the non-participation list?
We typically have, we've gone from zero in some home bases to one or two. Roughly maybe 8 or 9. I know I have actually Arlene and Pat, they run our program. And if you want, how many do we have currently?
We have about 15 and 8, 15, 7, and about 11.
Okay, so 15, 15, 11 out of 408. And it may go in and out. We have some of our students who, actually the students who continue to be on the non-participation list quarter after quarter, that is a student that we've already been making modifications. That's a student who starts falling into the RTI, our RTI pattern, and for our comprehensive support model. Because with all the support we're giving those students, it's very quick to see after we have 3 or 4 quarters go by and they have not elevated off of the non-participation list, we typically have a student that we really need to be looking more seriously at with additional interventions beyond the NP. We've had a lot of success. You know, as the kids come up from 5th grade to 6th grade, one of the things that we are actually looking at is starting it even earlier in 5th grade for the transition, to look at the 5th grade kids who may not be looking at their GPAs, talking with those parents, talking with the children, letting them know the type of program that's coming up, and just making sure that they're assimilated into that type of program long before they even enter the junior high doors.
My other question is on the practice makes permanent. Do you have any specific examples of how you may be modifying the homework for students based on learning? Are the teachers somehow checking before homework goes home that a student is proficient and then they're just practicing? How is that?
Well, typically the first thing is we don't send anything home from homework that has not been instructed upon.
You can instruct but not be sure that a student understands.
Right.
100%.
Well,
that's where you get the error again and again.
Yeah.
Doing homework.
In some cases, and yes, they do. As they monitor, as they see the student, they also may modify. They may look and say, this is a student who's having a very difficult time, and maybe circle and say, these are the ones I know that you can do. Or they may say, if you don't know it, do your best, don't try, come back and see me in the morning. They also will bring groups up when they're instructing to try to give them that little extra oomph that they can do with the ad hoc groups. So, you know, it's not a perfect world with the homework when you do send them home at that time. And there's almost so much we can do there except really monitor it, like you've said. But what really made a big difference, especially when it came to things like the homework packet or the number of assignments we get, we don't need to send 30 problems home. If a kid can show you they're proficient in five or not, I would rather them try it maybe one or two times and say, I can't do this, and come back to the teacher than have tried 30 times when you don't need to give those many that many problems for homework.
Yeah, I had a question about the non-participation study hall as well, and that was when we were doing similar things in eighth grade with eighth grade transition academy to high school. Although this is a little older than what you're dealing with. Well, not really, but there were a number of kids that actually liked it there because of the extra support they were getting and the extra interaction they were getting, and those kinds of things. Have you seen that with your non-partition study hall?
No,
or do they hate it? You know, want to get out as soon as possible? Or, you know, but there was a number of kids that kind of, they enjoyed having that extra one-on-one and sort of craved having that extra environment that they didn't want to transition out, so they made sure they didn't.
Yeah, we haven't seen, I don't think we've seen any kid who's willing to give up part of their lunch to want to come in. Now, however, I'll take that back. The ones who really need it, they're in there. They're working hard to get out. We have several students who do appreciate and value that one-on-one as well with the teacher. And the teachers invite, they have non-participation, but there's also 3 days a week where they will open their doors, or even during that time, any student who needs assistance, they can come in at that time. Some teachers have actually not waited till the child is below GPA. If they see a child, who actually is getting a D in their class, they say, no, you need to be coming in for the NP, the non-participation. We need to get
before
you out of that D
the
before they
watch,
actually,
the list,
yes,
okay.
sort of like a watchdog.
Okay. Can you go to the slide number 6 real quick?
Slide 2. Let's see. Tell me when.
Right there, past it. That is one handsome kid on that top.
Oh. Oh my gosh, third handsome kid.
Third from
there.
The left. Third from the left. Oh.
You know.
You want third from the left?
I promise.
Man. Oh. I just noticed it.
That was so not intentional. In fact, we went to dinner, the leadership team before this, and we were laughing about the number of students for teachers. We said, oh, well, so-and-so got their kid in there, and they got their kid in there, and then some of the leadership, hey, how come my kid isn't in there? So believe me, it was just, yeah. We don't.
We don't. How could they not put him in?
Exactly. How can they
but actually, that is a good picture, I will say.
Well, he is a good smile.
Looks like takes after kid. The mom. Okay. Mr. Spence, any other questions?
That's it.
Okay. There's another one you might.
That's my nephew, though. That's nephew.
Yeah.
Oh! Great, but not as good as this.
I won't say it. What's your total student population?
Our total student population is 1,156 students.
And special education population?
We're approaching, wow, we're up almost at 20.
At 20, so you're running?
We're running almost 2%. Well, no, I take that back. I'm sorry, speech and language. We're running about 3%.
Of those, are there any low incidents?
Actually, we have 5 autism children. RSP. Is that what you're?
No, low incidents, wheelchair, physically disabled, CP.
Blind, deaf.
No.
Orthopedically handicapped.
No, we have had students that we actually did. I apologize. I thought autism was in low incidence. I know it's a low incidence of children occurring.
It's not low incidence anymore.
No, we've utilized the Azusa, and we are part of the SELPA, and we brought in those services. We did utilize the deaf and hard of hearing because we had parents who were deaf and hard of hearing of an autistic child that we have at the school, that we have their services. But other than that, we haven't.
Are you sending any children from your school, say, to Azusa for blind?
No, we have not had to at this point.
Any for deaf and hearing, hard of hearing to Covina Valley?
No, we haven't at this point.
We
actually at one point brought services into the students from Azusa, those areas, but he has since promoted.
Okay, and what you have five autism?
We roughly have five. We're actually diagnosing a sixth, three of Asperger's, and we have another kinder coming in next year that we're currently working with Regional Center on Asperger's.
Okay, and... okay. What are the other disabilities? What's your largest?
The other disabilities typically range. They're an RSP, learning disabilities, visual processing, auditory processing, speech and language. We had quite a few students who came in last year who were speech and language that had been in STC and other programs, and their IEPs had been not pulled, but... back to the regular classroom, and they had been in STC for a few years for preschool, and they had come in, and then we ended up actually putting them into our RSP program when they had transitioned. They still needed the services, and we often wondered why the district, not this district, but why other districts or the parents felt to pull services, but when they did come in, they realized that they still needed the services, and they became, we then placed them RSP.
So how many are in self-contained and how many are in general ed?
Every single student are in general ed, mainstreamed, with support that pushes into the program.
Okay. And do you have any going to MPS schools?
MPS, non-public, non-public. School. Just Cortez. We have one child going to Cortez.
Okay. Have you done a study or has there been a Do you have hard data of the generalization into the high school, say, for instance, your success rate in the high school, the students after San Jose Edison, now that you've been here, what, 10 years?
Yeah, this is our 11th. It would be interesting. I'd love to see that done. I guess a high school would have to possibly do that because they get our kids. I will tell you this. We've often heard it said, and we've been very proud. There have been West Covina High School teachers who have said things to us like, you can spot a San Jose Edison student, or Bishop Amont is constantly coming, iPoly, Walnut. We have so many high schools that are actively recruiting our eighth graders, and we try to talk very highly of West Covina. We've often said we would hope that West Covina would come out even earlier and start to get to our children long before they start. They've all taken the Bishop Amont placement test this a week ago, and you know, West Covina has so many phenomenal things to offer its students with this program, with a lot of the things that I think a lot of our parents are making up their mind because they don't know enough about the program early on. I would love to see something go out in the first day packet, and I've often said you have many choices of high school. Here's why it should be West Covina High. And we sent a phenomenal group over. Some of our best and our brightest students last year did not choose iPoly, Troy, Diamond Bar, or Bishop Amont, Damien. They actually went on over to West Covina High, and so there should be some terrific successes as well from some of our former students over there.
But no data now.
Well, Mr. Fuller, actually, if it's there, that would probably be a question you may want to ask the high school principal to do, because for us to be able to go over and figure out, well, I mean, we know how our students did, but they know where the students are coming from. All of our CUMs go to there. And so they would probably have to do that study themselves to get you the data you're looking for. We would love to see it, but I mean, we would definitely.
Do you think a collaborative attempt with our district school would be in the forthcoming?
Well,
yeah, Holland Crest and Edgewood information would be good.
But Dr. Patton, do you see a collaborative?
The whole thing.
It could be collaborative. I'm just saying, typically collaborative means you're working together. But once we send our students over there, we don't have access to their records. We don't have access to their grades. We don't have access to social emotional aspects of that child. So it would be really hard for us. I mean, we would be willing to do whatever we could to assist, but really it's hands off because we don't have access. It's just an access. Not a lack.
Perhaps we could build a collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. Is there any peer-reviewed literature on going to a 7.5-hour day that shows it's productive?
Well, I think it might. I have not. I mean, a longer day. You figure most of your cultures and your countries that have an extended day, you will find the success. You don't really need to see literature when you look at your Eastern or your European countries that are doing extremely well. They have typically more than a 6-hour day. Your Asian countries that are doing extremely well, India, they have more than a 6-hour day. Many of them go Saturday. And so I think if you looked at the correlation between time on task to student learning, I think there's a pretty simple correlation there. I would say, though, it's the type of instruction that you have. If students were sitting in our campus for 7.5-hour days and really twiddling their thumbs, sort of doing whatever, you know, it could be time wasted. But the extra time that we put in was specifically geared towards our customized learning model. We have 53 minutes every day in which those students work through venues in which their own needs. Our teachers spend a lot of time planning this customized learning, and we would love to have you come over to see how is it working, what does it look like, what do these plans look like, why did the teachers choose this particular skill, why is that child on this software. It's a very, very strategic move that we made in extending the day in order to give the kids that customized learning time. And I do think we're going to definitely see additional benefits out of that.
So perhaps you could be the first to have a peer-reviewed article on the success of a 7-hour day.
I just may get writing as soon as I get home.
Maybe. I guess it's the fourth slide, but the data, you compare the school district to you. I'm just trying to.
Actually, we were just looking at trends.
Three. But I'm only being facetious. But growth 707 to 708, is that grade two? That's you, right?
Let me see.
It's the fourth slide. It's the one with purple, yellow.
Right, 708 grade two. We had a 73%. And then in 2007, and then 2008, in the yellow, they then went to 85, so we had a 12-point gain.
What did the 62 for the
62 school? Is the percentage of students on average in West Covina. So West Covina, 62% of our second graders in West Covina were proficient at second grade.
So
and 85 of San Jose Edison, and we had approximately a 23-point difference.
Okay, and one last thing, just one more time. What is the non-participation deal?
The non-participation are for students who have a GPA lower than it should be. In our case, it's a 1.75.
What happens?
What happens is that they are identified through each quarter. And when they're identified, we have letters that go home to their parents. We invite the parents in for a meeting. We let the parents know they're on a non-participation list. They are excluded from activities. However, they then are expected 2 days a week to meet with their home-based teachers in which they work on study skills. Sometimes we actually create lesson plans for the teachers to work with the kids. They just don't come into the room, sit down, and just work on homework. We really want them to think differently about their learning.
And how do they get off of that?
They get off of that by raising their grade. And it's monitored closely weekly. And by the way, Mr. Fuller, if I may, I know that special ed has our numbers, and someone may say, look, you have almost 1,200 kids at special, I mean, at San Jose Edison, and you have 3% who are in special ed. I have to tell you, we get the kids that come in. We have a full lottery. We had several students come in with special needs last year in our kindergarten class. There is no special selection. But I will say this, the hallmark of our school is that in our RTI model is that we keep kids out of special ed, that we think we're doing what it was intended to do. It was never the intention of having 10%, 20% of our children in special ed. The intention is what are you doing to change the way in which you instruct children to keep them out of special ed and give them the services. And so where sometimes our school is not because we're looked at an elitist school in which we have no special ed, I guarantee you we have more kids in that are so needy. But yet what these teachers do on an everyday basis to help these children and keep them out of special ed is to be admired and honored. And so sometimes I don't think it's fair when a comment, and you didn't make this comment tonight, please, this isn't going to you, but, you know, when it has been made before that, well, heck, you don't have enough special ed kids. Of course your scores are going to go up. Absolutely not. We opened our doors with 71% of our kids not reading, and every year we get waves and waves of children that come to us very, very below grade level, and we're working extremely hard to keep these kids back on, get these kids back on grade level and keep them out of special ed.
I'm actually really interested. This is the first time I've ever seen it presented this way. You're addressing the transition kids, and you refer to them that third, fourth, and fifth, sixth transitions. We've always seen in the past that transition of that third, fourth, I don't know how to say this quite politically as such, but let's put it this way. K-3 children are really neat. Fourth graders change. and parents seem that same way. They seem to be more, in tune to what the child's doing. But once they hit that fourth grade and they're ready, set to go, and they're on their own and they don't want to be dropped off and hugged and kissed and all that other good stuff, you know, then we see a different change, and we usually see a tremendous downturn. I guess what my question is you referenced this idea going from 20 students to 34 students and having an impact. Do you see any of the other stuff, or is that the thing that seems to be the greatest impact to them?
I would say that would probably be the greatest impact, and it comes with the children who have a harder time learning. See, when you're looking at a third grade class, let's say of 20-1, and you see those five kids who are, you thinking, my gosh, they are going to fall apart the minute they get into a 34-1. They're not going to get the responsiveness. They're not going, you know, we can see the writing on the wall, and so we don't wait until, you know, April or May to say, okay, we need to do something about it. We start having conversations with each other, within the group of teachers, with their parents. We start to identify, is this an organization problem? Is this something we need to go and do? Do they need additional assistance? If they are going, definitely when they do go into fourth grade, we have the transition cards. We can have those meetings, excuse me, with the third and fourth grade teachers meeting. They even look at something like homework. We usually have homework packets of first grade, second grade. A lot of times you get your homework in the whole week. Well, third grade, they get their homework for the whole week, but they start doing daily homework, and the teachers check to make sure the kids are doing something each night, because in fourth grade, it's daily homework. So those types of things that we're trying to transition them through, just to help them be as successful as possible.
Just think it's interesting that you take that time to do that. I see only one other principal here, so I've asked these questions sort of going forward, but maybe I'll ask it for you a different way with respect to the English language learners and how you are either addressing their particular needs, and then perhaps secondly, what perhaps are you doing different than, say, Mary would do or some of the other principals would do?
Oh, I don't know what, and Mary does, she has definitely a higher EL population. We had our greatest gain. We increased by 1% with the EL population. We had 15 new EL students come in at kindergarten through the lottery. We spend a lot of time on the SDI strategies. When you look at how do you transition those children from Spanish to English, the cooperative learning, the visuals, the hands-on science, the hands-on math, there are so many things that research will tell you needs to be done to transition children and have the acquisition of English. So we spend a lot of time on that. And I'm very excited. I mean, we must be doing something right, because our ELs had a score of 863 on the API. And the kids that we redesignated, the children that we've redesignated and are now redesignated fluent, had a 913. They actually outperformed our English-only population, or our school-wide population. So we're very excited that not only have we been working with these children, because I'll be honest, whether you get two kids in your class who don't speak English or you get five kids in your class that don't speak English, you still got to take care of the kids who don't speak English. And your strategies need to be the same, or whether they're a Title I child or a special ed child. The type of strategies you need to utilize for all children that's going to help create a good learning environment is what we try to put out there.
And so then you lead into my next question, and is that, so there's perhaps a benefit that the kids that have had the opportunity to learn a second language in that depth perhaps are have better opportunities. When I was in San Diego, I stopped by, all these guys know about it, but stopped by the Rosetta Stone, and they mentioned that you and several other of our schools have that program, and I know in some of the other schools we're using that program to help with English language learners.
In our case, yeah. We only use it to teach Spanish. In fact, Mr. Orozco is our teacher, our Rosetta Stone teacher, and we have 7th and 8th grade zero period that we have that during the week, 2 days a week for each. That we make it available. And they can also have it available from home. A lot of these programs are wonderful as far as because they're internet-based, and there's a lot of things that you can work on even from home with the tutorials. And so we've had a lot of success setting up our parents who do have access to the internet, setting up our parents with those tutorials at home for those children. It makes a big difference.
It's my turn.
Oh, okay.
The tutoring program for SFA, is that paid staff or volunteers?
Paid staff.
And how many tutors do you have?
We have four tutors, and they tutor 20 minutes a day, 25 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week. And Aaron, but approximately how many kids do we have in there right now? 48. Currently. And we start off with our lowest first graders. That's always a priority, the lowest level of the need. And if we can bring in some of our second and third graders, and we've also been using some of our tutors in some of the phonics at the upper levels, where some of those kids missed out on some of that phonics instruction and different things, again, very strategic. We've worked out some programs. I believe it's the Fast Forward that... Fast Track, I'm already thinking of special ed software. The Fast Track Phonics, in which we've looked at some of those grade levels that could use additional assistance, and some of the older kids.
The individual teacher tutoring, what students are selected to have that tutoring?
That is all per on the basis of the individual teacher. We have several teachers who voluntarily will tutor their kids during lunch. We'll bring them in after school. We'll offer the parent, okay, come on in, and I will, you know, tutor them and work with them in the morning. Or if they need help, just give me a call, give me an email, let me know. I'll be more than happy to sit down with them at time beyond the working day.
So it isn't a certain, a lot of times we hear about the bubble child is going to be getting the extra tutoring. This is almost so individualized, like a parent can come to you and say, my child's really struggling, and they may work something out there.
We try to. We don't try to, because, you know, every teacher has a specific day or commitments, and so if they were, we would say if that could work out, that's terrific. If not, we definitely look at all the different types of modifications that we can make. Sometimes it may be just a matter of helping that parent access that software from home that they just couldn't get, and sending home the disc and walking them through it and making sure they have that and they can get the additional tutoring there as well.
That is so wonderful. To have that opportunity and to have those resources available at your fingertips to take home. I always had my computer, but I didn't always have all the programs I needed to assist my son. The hands-on science materials, that sounds really exciting. Is it at all your grade levels?
Yes. That's typically FOSS, California FOSS, and then we have Prentice Hall at the Junior Academy.
When I went to your, I think it was an open house last year, your science program look phenomenal. And so
those teachers really work hard. And we have grade level coordinators, again, a leadership position in science, or excuse me, not grade level, the curriculum coordinators that really work hard to collect those kids, help the inventorying, make sure it gets back out. Kathy Cooper making sure we have the supplies ordered. I mean, it's just a well-running machine in that way. Doesn't mean it doesn't have its headaches when people don't always get in their inventory sheet, but we really try hard.
Well, I didn't get to see all of the grade levels, but the ones I saw, it looked great. Phenomenal. And I wanted to go back and learn science. This is the non-participation, and I know you've been questioned about this a lot, but my question's different. When did the teachers get to eat lunch?
We have to eat lunch. No, they do. They do. Seriously. They do. It's a 50-minute program, a lunch in there. So if we have 20 minutes for the non-participation, it's the 30 minutes of lunch, two times a week only. But also there's that prep period of which they're meeting, the collaboration, and a lot of the teachers will say, you know what, let's just meet with the kids, let's just do whatever, we'll bring our lunch in, we'll collaborate, we'll do lesson plans for next week during that extended time. I know it sounds confusing, but just the way the Junior Academy schedule runs. But they are definitely guaranteed a 30-minute lunch that's built in that they can have to do whatever they would like with.
Well, I know I'd get hungry in the middle of the day, so... But I think that's great that you're supporting the students that way and they have the opportunity to do it in the middle of the school day because, like you said, sometimes it's hard to get there before or after school. The technology staff that you mentioned, are they designated only for technology or are they teachers that have expertise in technology?
It's a little of both. Actually, there's an administrator, my director of technology, Claudia Paulos. She's here and she set up this and put it together. Great job. And she drives the instructional aspect of it and oversees the team. And then I have two user support technicians. One's full-time, just keeping the machines running. I mean, when you have a staff this large, this many students, this many computers, and if these things start going down, you couldn't do what you need to do. So they're constantly out there filling tickets. Our teachers submit a ticket if something's wrong. We also have a person who assists him but is also our data owner. And he is a liaison between the district and New York in the type of data and making sure he enters things so we can also do call-outs. If the student's absent, we call out every day to on the dial system. And he runs that as well as his expertise as well in building, FileMaker Pro databases. We've had a lot of data that has been, we moved to Infinite Campus. It's a new Edison student management system that has taken a lot of our time in how we use that to track discipline, track everything under the sun about students. And so, again, there's no way we would be where we are with technology without their assistance. And then we have our library media support team as well that work with the teachers, and they make up the rest of our. We put them under the technology.
Phenomenal. I was having trouble at home, so I was wondering how you got all that done.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a support service greatly needed.
And I'm going page by page, so it's a little mixed up. You talked about the SFA incorporating the Lexia. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. The intervention strategies. Is that part of the Success for All program, or is it different?
It's different. Well, in SFA, you have a 15-minute block of time that's called additional skills. And we can typically use that for additional skills, book club, different types of things. For these students that we have in the accelerator group that we're really trying to push them forward, we've used that time, plus we've taken a bit of time in sort of condensing some of the things to really give them this Lexia intervention every day. For it, I believe, I want to say 20 minutes, but I thought we extended it to the 15, so it is for the 15 minutes.
So for gifted students or intervention students?
The kids we're trying to accelerate their learning. So if they're 2 years behind grade level, we're hoping that we can recover them to, last year we actually recovered 25% of our students who were below grade level.
And all of them participated in?
No, this year this is something new because we did not have Lexia all year long last year available to us.
Okay. ask you that question? This is just came up from a question George asked. It has nothing to do with your school.
Okay.
But you said that your parents that are deaf get support from AZUSA,
not
Unified
AZUSA,
School District.
Covina Valley.
That's what I meant, and that's what I wrote. What kind of support do they receive? The parents receive.
In this case, it was just translation services. Was my comment that when we had an IEP for an autist child that we diagnosed with autism, both parents were deaf. So we had asked, and we utilized the services through the SELPA, had a translator from South Hills High School come over and translate for us several times because the parent interviews, you know, the assessment.
Right,
and
right.
So several times we brought them over and translated for the parents.
Are the interpreters available for parent meetings, or is it only for IEPs?
No, if we were to see the need, I'm sure we could bring them over. But we haven't had the need at this point.
Well, now there's always, since you use computers so well.
I'll tell you, if somebody, when they want to get into a skill, translating, it's there, that and speech pathology.
That's what I'm trying to talk my niece into going to. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Was there any other question? Well, I appreciate you coming in and being giving us the update on what's happening in your school, and we look forward to having you next year.
Great, thank you, and you're all welcome out to come on out and see what we're up to. Okay, thank you.
I know that you might need to get back, so if you were.
I'm going to go write that article with Mr. Fuller with Father for that.
Peer review.
The board president's report from closed session. The Board of Education authorized the Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources to notify, identify temporary and selected probationary teachers and advise them prior to March 15, 2009 that they will not be recommended for re-election for the 09-10 school year. It was also moved for full expulsion to by George Fuller and seconded by Steve Cox to expel student number 193827. The vote was unanimous to expel the student. The if anybody's interested, the about what's the funding for schools. This is saying the Understanding California School Funding Crisis. Rick Pratt is going to be in Pasadena on February 18th at 7 o'clock giving an overview of what's happening for the education funding. And Rick Pratt works closely with CSBA.
Is he not the vice president now? What's his title now?
He's not vice president. He's...
Yeah, well, he's
okay.
Just
yeah.
Okay.
Jessica? Mike?
I'm fine.
We were going to move on to the organizational part of our meeting. Oh, I don't have any blue cards in front of me. Was there anybody who wished to address the board? Organizational part of our meeting. Is there anything anyone would like to take off of consent?
Six. Item number what?
Six.
And, ten.
Is there anything anyone would like to add to consent?
Four.
Is there anybody who would like to speak to number four? putting four on consent then? Is there a second?
So you're adding four.
And we're taking off 6 and 10. It's been moved by...
I know.
Oh, Jessica.
Steve.
Seconded. And it was seconded by Steve Cox. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That brings us to number 6, Mr. Fuller. Take off this item.
Yes, I asked to be taken off. I am glad that San Jose Edison is making an effort in special education. I am glad to see that they're beginning to build some relationships and moving forward. I think that the community that's developing over there in terms of parents, it is important that they have a representative that go forward. I think it needs to be San Jose Edison's. I see us as having to improve it. Could approve it. Could even lead to a conflict in terms of interest, in that their interests may conflict with ours in terms of LEA, and they need to be there, and they don't need to be coming through here. I think San Jose Edison has a mechanism, and if they were to address the SELPA and do that collaboration and team building, that they could eventually get their own approval system in here. And so I'm just going to say that we should stay out of it. I'll vote no and allow them to approve their own representative or come up with a mechanism to do so. In terms of the person, I'm sure that they've selected someone who's good, but I think that would be their person, not going through our approval process.
I'll move this item. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Can I ask a
question? Mr. Cox?
Then why are we doing this? I mean, taking George's question in that case.
Are you asking George why?
No,
he's
God, no.
Oh, okay. As part of the SELPA agreement, there needs to be a person who gets nominated to represent them at the advisory council level. And if you recall, at the last meeting, you approved their SELPA extension with ours.
Just, I guess the same thing as you. I just assume, well, why do we have to do this at all then? Why don't we just let them go and be their own SELPA and do whatever they want to do and not be within our jurisdation of anything of that nature, and let them do what it is that they need
at
to
the
do.
Last meeting, you voted
so
to
I
have
know,
the SELPA
part
agreement
so
be part of it, and this is a part of that agreement that they nominate a person as part of that agreement.
I have a question.
Mr. Spence.
When do we do ours?
When did we do our SELPA agreement?
When did we do our CAC stuff? What timeline are we on? I know we've done it from time to time.
The nomination is basically, according to what we read, is there until the person either decides not to be there or until there's a vacancy or until the board decides to send in the rep. The way it's written, it's almost like a life sentence.
Because I know we've reviewed it from time to time.
If you review it again when we do the SELPA agreement, but you can review it at any time you wish.
Because I mean, obviously, I think we're doing this because it's a new SELPA. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
So it's not like the timing of it.
No.
And so what was the mechanism we used before when we reviewed it on a regular basis?
I don't think you reviewed the appointment on a regular basis because the wording, not since I've been here. And if you did it before, based on the wording of the actual SELPA agreement, it's basically either at the will of the board or until such vacancy occurs.
And if you miss 3 meetings, then they ask for another representative because if that person doesn't call, they're no longer usually interested.
Doesn't call
and say they're going to be absent from the CAC meeting. If that happens 3 times in a row, they will call the district. They'll ask the district if that person is still interested. They'll also call the person to see if they're still interested in having that position. More often than not, they are asking people in the district to there's not representatives. We've had representatives at our district. There's actually 3 I'm the alternate. Each school district usually gets two. So, but if there's people interested, that could always come forward too. There's just not.
I'm just asking because I know we've reviewed it before, and I didn't know the mechanism when I saw this on here. I didn't know if there was a time certain that we do that or not. But we've done it more than once, at least since I've been on board. We've reviewed it because we reappointed the same people before.
Right.
So I know we reviewed it. So.
I think that they were just doing that to make sure that the board understood.
Well, the time you became alternate, it was added on. As I remember the time sequence, there was two. There was yourself, and one vacancy became open, and that was filled. And then there was another vacancy. That'd be the second time. And I think the third time is when you became the alternate, and that was listed.
That was the third time?
Yeah, so that'd be three. But I'm just kind of in the back of my mind type of memory.
You don't have to be a parent, so you can be a community member if that's something you're interested in.
If we want to review it, I'm fine if we want to review it. I'm fine if we'd like to review it, that'd be fine. But I was just asking for this item. Let's go ahead and agendize it for review then at one of our future meetings, President Falls.
Has this been moved?
It's been moved. It's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
It passes 4-1 with George Fuller being the no vote. You really want to agenda? Don't do that.
Yeah, that's just important.
Number 9, appointment of administrative positions.
Board of Education, we are asking that you approve an appointment for the Assistant Principal of Hollandcrest, Mario Morales, and Dean at West Covina High School, Kevin Despart.
I will move that item.
Is there a second?
Yes.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously with Steve Cox moving it and Mike Spence is the second. That brings us to the end of our meeting.
No, I took 10 off.
Well, sorry.
And
I did cross that off.
You didn't want to deal with it.
I will draw your attention to page 10D. The second item from the bottom is purchase order number 0902970 for the firm of Margaret Chidester. I would like to move the approval of the purchase orders with the exception of that item.
I would like to discuss the motion.
Mr. Spence.
There was actually another item on here that I had a question about. And I don't know the answer. I was trying to look and find out. But if you look on page F, appeal number 0902940, which is the fifth item down, we're remitting use tax to the state of California through the Board of Equalization for stuff our food service has used. And I guess my question comes in the context of Delaware County Board of Supervisors. I don't know if they made a decision or not. I was concerned in withholding money to the state if money was ever withheld to them. And I don't know. Obviously, the state has not yet. Controller Chang hasn't prioritized completely what all his payments would be. But if at some point he doesn't send money to education to fund what they've promised us, I don't know if. Obviously, that's a small amount of money, but I don't know if that's something that the board would be interested in looking at, whether or not that's a possibility as well, that we could be on the same track as LA County. It's a different kind of tax, but I don't know if there's been any discussions in the school community about that at this point. It looks like education is one of his priorities in funding because he's trying, I guess he says he's using state constitution as his rationale for prioritizing that. But who knows what the future brings there. Have there been any discussions about that?
Mr. Frutos?
Well, I haven't had any discussions of withholding use taxes just because we're just carrying what the people buy into the state, but it is an interesting idea.
I mean, obviously,
$1,000 is a tax.
Well, $1,000, but you know, there's other taxes that we do pay. There's other taxes we do pay. We do pay a sales tax that goes to local communities in the state when we buy textbooks, when we buy all kinds of materials. And so, I mean, if the state's unable to fund their obligation, I just throw it out there, maybe we need to fund our obligation with the money that we send the state of California.
But don't. The two issues. First of all, I know as tax professionals, we have just recently received notifications from the State Board of Equalization to remind us, to remind our clients, that it is their obligation to pay use taxes for items that they perhaps purchased from out of state, that they have purchased through the internet or purchased with the intent for resale and ended up using it themselves. And then secondly, while your idea is unique and perhaps appropriate, we do run the risk of being fined and the penalties for failing to pay sales taxes are rather extensive. Even though they may not get their money in time, they'll still want their pound of flesh, too.
So, all we have to do is withhold the ADA.
So there's no reason that we should do that. So I suggest that we move this item forward.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously.
Then I would like to vote separately on item number 0902970. I will move that item.
I will second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
It passes 4-1 with Mike Spence being the no vote. Further Board of Education discussion?
Are we going to agendize the CAC thing? Or?
I have no problem agendizing it. It would be nice if... are they still doing the special ed newsletter?
I don't think I've seen a special ed newsletter.
Because they might want to ask for individuals that are interested if they were doing it. But it doesn't sound like we're probably not.
How do you go about finding people that are interested?
Very carefully.
Usually people step up and they ask about it. And I know we have information meetings at our CAC meetings four times a year, and we always tell the audience that if they're interested in, we explain what a CAC rep is, and if they're interested to go to their special ed director and let that person know that they're interested, and then we, even if they're not members, they can come to the regular meetings. So the people who have shown an interest are usually just interested in the information and not interested in being reps. But I have seen other school districts put it in their newsletter if they had an opening, and then they would say.
Well,
that
we can certainly do that if that's what the board wants, unless there's someone on the board that wants to do it.
I'm just agendizing it for us to take a look at. That's all.
You don't want action?
Well. I mean, we could take action here, but we haven't agendized right. it. So
no, when we write it for the agendas, is it for action or discussion for discussion?
We can, or action. But I don't know what the action would be because we haven't discussed it yet.
Information. Why don't you go information, then we can see where we're
going. Okay.
Please.
Any further discussion? Dates to remember, February 16th, President's Day, the district will be closed, and our next meeting will be February 24th. We were adjourned at 8:24.